We're in the middle of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, a time when Muslims traditionally fast from sunrise to sunset. But that aspect of the holiday can be especially difficult for some with eating disorders. For more, we're joined on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Rania Awad, Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Stanford University. Good evening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this holy month and the role fasting plays in the community during this time.
Absolutely. I think first, just taking a step back and understanding a little bit about what the month is, it's the month of fasting, as you mentioned. It's one of the main pillars of the faith. Observant Muslims will fast first and foremost in obedience to God and to empathize with those who have less. And that becomes really important for people with eating disorders, because there's both a spiritual component to the month, but also a very strong communal component as well. Friends and families break fast together every day for the entire month. There's a lot of emphasis on that sense of community. And if a person has an eating disorder, what has usually been kind of an invisible illness really has become much more visible to others. People are asking questions why they're not eating, or they're eating less, for example, and it may become very difficult for them.
All right. So if you are trying to recover from an eating disorder where you don't eat, but then your whole community is saying don't eat all day, it gives you maybe cover to do that. But you have internal feelings of, am I doing this because this is part of my religion or part of my disorder?
Right. And both can definitely be the case. Restricting, which is part and parcel of eating disorders, can very much be something that is masked, as you mentioned, by fasting. And this is where kind of having a really good treatment plan in place in order to say, is this the kind of restricting that may actually trigger your condition further, and thereby you might be exempt from fasting altogether, or whether this is something that actually is okay, like it's under control, you've had an eating disorder, but it's under control now, and you're able to fast and not get triggered by the restricting.
Are there some exemptions for people who are maybe ill or elderly or very young?
Exactly. The elderly, the ill, the very young, and also those who are traveling. And the illness does not have to be a serious illness. It could be a simple, you know, cold, let's say. And it doesn't have to be excruciating travel either. These are all exemptions, and people may then make these up later. Or if it's a chronic condition, they may pay in charity instead.
All right. So let's talk about eating disorders in the Muslim community. Is this talked about, or is it sort of a hush-hush? What needs to happen?
So much more than before, I would say. Much like the rest of mental health discussion across the nation has really elevated in more recent years, particularly after the pandemic, I would say that has also found its way into the Muslim community as well, which I'm very thankful for. And in my lab, the Stanford Muslim Mental Health and Islamic Psychology Lab, we've actually published a paper in The Lancet a couple years ago, really helping clinicians understand how to help their patients that have all types of mental health conditions, including eating disorders. So that was kind of a start of a conversation. Since then, there's become a toolkit now for Muslims with eating disorders and support groups as well.
Talk about those support groups, because that can be really part of the healing. How does a support group work?
The support groups is really a place where people come together, a safe space, and they're able to discuss it, but it's led by a clinician who is an eating disorder specialist. And then there's the peers, the folks who are in the support group. And actually, because of the virtual nature, the ones that I'm aware of actually were on a virtual platform. And so therefore, there were people who were able to tap into the resource, even though it was here in California, they were actually tapping in actually globally from around the world, interestingly enough.
All right. Give some advice to someone who's listening right now, and they're trying to participate in Ramadan and do what they're supposed to do, but they are facing an eating disorder. How can they reach out? Can they reach out to Stanford or other places?
Stanford has an excellent eating disorders clinic, absolutely, and there's a lot of, I do a lot of consultations with them on cultural and religious competence. Also, if anyone is local, I would very highly encourage they reach out to a Muslim mental health organization that's local to us here called Maristan, M-A-R-I-S-T-A-N, and this is an organization that focuses on culturally and religiously congruent therapy and care for Muslim populations, and also gives training to clinicians and others who are working with Muslim populations. And both of those resources might be very useful for people to find the kind of help that is, you know, immediately connects with their background.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon talking about this very important issue.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Dr. Rania Awad, Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Stanford University.